All right, welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Today, David Ratipaw. Well, today, depending on when or where you're or how you're listening to this, but today, David Ratipaw, Director of Information Technology at ANC Plastics. We gotta love plastics. Have to love plastics in this world. So I don't know about all those people out there that hate plastics, but today we love plastics. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
So let's start off with this. How many end users and or people that you must manage or support, take care of, coddle, make sure everything's working on a daily basis?
Okay. Yeah. So we've got just about 100 end users.
Okay. So talk to me, man. What's daily life like over there?
Yeah. So in my position, daily life is really a lot of figuring out how to make everybody's life easier. I feel like that's my role. You know, we have a couple of people that work in the IT department with me that are more responsible for kind of day-to-day end user support. And my role is more finding ways to make IT support the rest of the business. So evaluating different options that we have in whether it's automation, AI, anything like that, you know, kind of vetting a lot of different vendors that come to us with solutions and the viability of them from a business perspective. You know, I think right now we're going through a Salesforce integration with our ERP system. So a whole lot of communication between an integrator, the Salesforce side, our ERP side, making sure everything runs smoothly and everybody's happy with the performance of the systems that they're working on.
That's not an easy job. I mean, the ERP API, I mean, any type of ERP migration. So if you're good at it, then I just see that you've done ERP migrations before.
Yeah.
And usually it's not something that people really look forward to. But if you enjoy it.
No, I mean, it's not, there are tougher jobs, all right? It's not the worst thing in the world.
So 100 end users, 3 people team. That's good. You guys, it sounds like your company truly appreciates the value of IT.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I say that because the average ratio of IT staff to end user, which we've seen from crunching numbers and data over time, is about 1 to 100, and you've got 3 to 100. So that's good. You said something that's kind of a term that everyone throws around a lot. You said AI and automation. AI is such it's like, yeah, we got to migrate stuff to the cloud. AI, I find to be an even more grandiose layer of confusion for people, multiple layers of confusion. How do you guys plan on using AI to make life, make more money, to do more with less, or to automate or to streamline?
Yeah. So, I think kind of like everybody else, our first step in using AI was actually just having our salespeople use it to help them communicate with customers and really make sure that the wording on whatever they're trying to communicate is effective and kind of palatable to the people that they're trying to talk to. Because I think, you know, everybody has an idea they want to communicate, but sometimes it needs a little revision to really reach the person, right?
Okay. What are you guys using? Claude, what are we using for that?
At the moment, they're just plugging things into ChatGPT and saying, hey, can you make this sound more professional or more more approachable? You know, it depends on the sales rep. We've kind of told them, hey, this is how you come off by default. So you should ask it to rephrase it in a way that's either a little more direct or a little more, a little less direct for some of them. You know,
you should really try Claude. I've used Claude. Claude is so good. So good. I find it just better from a text perspective. And for everyone out there listening, if you want our secret AI weapon, it's Poe.com. Are you familiar with Poe, P-O-E?
No, I haven't heard of that.
You can thank me later. Everyone thank me later. Thank me later. Please, I want your comments on, I want thank yous. Poe.com, because it's basically like this massive, like, group of all of the AI bots that are out there, and Claude is on there. Claude, ChatGPT 4, whatever version these things are now and all that stuff. But so someone said, hey, sales guys, was it you, by the way? Hey, sales guys, stop doing this. Please use ChatGPT. Or who said that?
It was actually the president of our company. She tries to stay kind of really abreast new technological offerings. She's not an IT person by nature, but she kind of tries to stay in the know on all the future tech coming out and everything. That's kind of why we have a bigger IT department than you'd typically see. She tries to modernize the company a lot. And she just said, hey, I've been using this personally. I like the results I've gotten with it. So let's go ahead and encourage all of our salespeople to use it.
If this isn't a reason to use Claude, I don't know what is. Amazon invested $4 billion. $4 billion.
Okay.
It's very good. Yeah. I mean, very good. It will, again, thank me later. I would love to know. I want your CEO to say, wow, this is really cool too. I want to know what she says. Let me know later. I want to know if she thinks it's better. But really, 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 really good.
Yeah, we'll have to check it out.
So, sales reps that don't know how to talk to people. Whoa, that's rough.
I wouldn't say they don't know how to talk. Reach a wider audience with how they speak.
Okay, good. So what else? What other AI things?
Yeah, so a kind of cool tool that we've been exploring that's offered by our VoIP provider is live AI feedback on outbound calls.
Let me take a guess on who the VoIP provider is. Dialpad?
No.
Hold on. It's either going to we'll do Rumpelstiltskin. I only get three. Vonage or RingCentral?
Oh, you got it on the last one.
Ah, there we go.
Yep. Good old RingCentral.
Pulling it off today. Okay. So how's the outbound sentiment? I guess we call that sentiment. Mm-hmm. You're talking too fast. Phil, I get you're talking too fast a lot from the sentiment stuff.
Yeah. So we haven't rolled it out to everyone yet. We're still kind of exploring the tool and seeing if we want to purchase enough licenses or potentially just buy a couple licenses and use it for actually onboarding and training people. So people that aren't necessarily used to working in a sales environment or making outbound calls. Yep. But it seems like a really, really cool tool. I mean, obviously, it's got its limitations. It's not going to accurately predict how everyone wants to be talked to. And we tell them, hey, if you have an established relationship and you know how to talk to them, you know the customer better than the AI is going to know the data set. So you always have the ability to kind of say, I don't care if you're telling me they don't like how I'm talking. I know this is how they like to be talked to. But as a general tool, it seems like it's got a pretty good handle on improving people's abilities.
RingCentral is a sponsor of the show, so love RingCentral. Not biased, but a little bit biased. Actually, I'm very biased, but I'm always biased towards I'm biased towards vendors for the right reason. I would say I'm vendor neutral, but I'm biased because let's just be honest. Some people have good support, some don't. Some have better products, some don't. So we got to be biased. People saying I'm non-biased. You have to be biased.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So We're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
Any other AI tips or tricks?
Well, no tips. If anyone wants to give some advice on this, we're actually trying to find a way to use it to improve our purchasing and supply chain performance. We haven't found a good avenue for that yet, but I'm sure there's a lot of stuff out there. But I think that's an area where it could be extremely useful. We just haven't found a way to leverage it.
Where are the roadblocks? Or where are the potential things to speed up? I mean,
so I think our biggest issue is being in the plastics industry. It's actually kind of surprising to a lot of people. Our suppliers are not just exclusively Chinese by any means. We have kind of a global supply chain. Mm-hmm. And that includes North American suppliers. So our issue is we have, you know, maybe 30 different suppliers that all make the same product. And even though it's the same product, you get customers that say, I want this brand. And we're like, guys, it's the same thing regardless of who makes it, but they only want to buy it from a certain brand. So it becomes incredibly time consuming for our supply chain team to try to manage. We need to import, you know, 3 pallets of this product, but 1 from each supplier, even though it's the same product and we can get a better price buying 3 pallets from an individual supplier. So it becomes extremely time consuming for them to try to balance that across multiple locations that we have as well.
Well, Greg Liddell, the Frenchman behind the scenes of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, is my AI engineer guy. Greg, marinate on that. Maybe we should bring you on the show and we can talk. We can talk a little bit of French too. It'll be sound nice. And maybe we have a solution for that. Some kind of, I would think there could be some kind of no code solution for that. But yeah, that is kind of wild. It's literally the exact same product, the exact same thing. I mean,
yeah. It's all brand affiliation. You know, if they've said, hey, even if we tell them it's the same product, maybe in the back of their minds, they're thinking it's similar and they're getting a better price. So they're selling it to us as the same thing or something.
Maybe they have a relationship with them somehow that's unseen, that's unknown. There's an AI thing. How do we uncover secret relationships and build more behind the scenes, deep rooted relationships? So any other AI things?
I'm sure there will be in the future, but we're trying to take it kind of piecemeal and look at it department by department and try and implement it that way. Like I'm sure the next step would probably be improving our warehouse layout using AI, because I'm sure there's a lot of area for us to improve, like the speed and efficiency that we're picking and packing orders.
Since I ask this a lot on the shows, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
28.
Oh, this is great. This is excellent. So you're like a spring chicken.
Yeah.
A spring chicken. How did you... So a lot of people that have been on the show that are either IT directors or CTOs, they may have gotten started out in IT, you know, like we were playing around with computers when they were like kind of a new thing, like an invention, right? Mm-hmm. Like there was no internet. There was no, there was no cell phones. There was no iPhone. There was like an Apple IIc floppy, a computer with floppy disks that you put in. You had boot disks. You had to boot a computer up with a disk. There was no, we had computers with no hard drives. So when I speak of an age like that, what is that? I'm curious as what the thoughts are that go through your head.
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of had an interest in technology, but it didn't actually manifest in a career sense for quite a while. I went to business school rather than anything for IT. But it was, I don't know if you're familiar with management information systems. It's through business school, but it does heavily involve using computers.
Okay.
And from there, I kind of got involved in process improvement and performance analysis.
Yep.
Which it was funny. I was working at a place as a consultant, and their CEO, it was like a medium sized business, probably 500 to 1,000 employees. And their CEO said, I don't want to learn an ERP system. Give me everything I want in Excel. So my job was to create an ERP light in Excel. And that got me pretty good at using Excel, I'd say. And from there, it was just like the place I'm working at now was looking for someone that they advertised as an Excel expert. Turns out they needed an IT person. And I just kind of filled the role and learned what I needed to learn.
Wow. So, yeah, I got to know. I got to know how deep can one go in Excel? It must be insane.
If you are comfortable using VBA, that's the built-in programming language behind Excel. Uh-huh. You can make it do a lot of things that you shouldn't make it do. I mean, I've seen people who have like, you know, they're on a contract, right? Not a full-time hire. And they have a certain number of hours that they're supposed to work on a project for. They finish it 2 hours early. And since their productivity is being tracked, they don't want to launch like Internet Explorer or anything, right? And browse the web. But they'll build a media player into Excel so that the computer tracks their work as Excel and it's playing media files from YouTube or something. I mean, you can make it do ridiculous things if you're comfortable with VBA.
What was this ERP system in Excel? Like, I don't, like, how? Like, what did it have? I want to know some of these components.
Yeah. So it had a very, I would say, lightweight sort of purchase order requirements generation tool. So it would look at past component usage and build sort of a rudimentary, here's what we'll need to order in the next coming months based on past demand and past trends. It had a sort of milestone analysis so that we could track, you know, where are we getting held up whenever we're trying to process things. And then it had, you know, some basic throughput analysis for a high level view so that they could see, hey, we do have enough orders in the pipeline. We're getting held up at the actual, it was a 3D printing company. So we're getting held up at the printers or we're getting held up. The way we were doing 3D printing, you kind of had to excavate the prints out of the printers because it was sand-based printing. So it was like, oh, we're getting held. We don't have enough people working on the excavation after the print job is done, that kind of stuff. But it was, I mean, there were a lot of different modules, but I would say opposed to an actual ERP system, you could definitely see the shortcomings, but it was in a more digestible format for someone who was stuck in their ways and didn't want to learn another tool.
So when he went into work, what did he click on? I'm just curious. Like,
what he clicked on a workbook that was called, I think I named it like, it was like the company name underscore ERP or something. I mean, the company had an actual ERP system that the rest of the users all use.
It was
only the high level executives that worked in the sort of ERP light in Excel.
More than one executive worked in this Excel workbook.
Yes.
Was it a shared workbook?
An
API from the ERP? How did you get data from that workbook to like, how did you input data? Like, how did it work?
So it had live links. There was our ERP system had a live database and a replicated database that was probably like 2 seconds behind or something. And so it was built with connections to the replicated database. So it was loading in data from that replicated database live, refreshing like every, I want to say, minute or so. And they would, it because they weren't using it to actually, you know, place any purchase orders or process an order or anything like that, they were looking at it to get a high level view of the performance of the business. They didn't need to have a shared workbook because they weren't using it to actually affect any change that gets sent out across the business.
It was like basically analysis.
Yes.
It was like high level. I need reporting. Yeah. Give me reporting. Wow. That's just really cool. That's really nerdy. I love it.
Yeah. Really awesome. Not my most fun thing, but it was functional.
Hold that thought, because I do want to know what the most fun thing is. But that's was that type of thing, like from a general IT leadership perspective, mm-hmm. is that type of thing secure?
It is secure as long as it is not able to push data back or be accessed by anyone outside of our network. I mean, it's as secure as any other tool is going to be, in that if the leadership copies it and takes it to their home computer and opens it on that and their home computer is compromised, then no, it's not going to be secure. But I think in general, the point of failure on that is still going to be the end user and not the program or application itself.
Which he certainly did.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, to be fair, they always say CYA, right? I told him, do not take this home. Don't put this on any of your personal machines. Absolutely. Got done that way because I know the kind of guy he was, but
yeah. I'll be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause, that's humans. That's
exactly.
That's just every human. I think that's every human. I'm telling you, don't do this. I know you're going to, but yeah. I have to. What is your most fun thing? This is a great question, actually. I got to ask more people this. What is your most fun thing in IT?
Okay. So this comes from the perspective of someone who really loves data analytics, but my most fun thing is actually a project that we're currently working on. It's been kind of ongoing for the past couple of years because it's live right now, but we're constantly working to make improvements to it. I love competition, and what we do to kind of instigate competition and foster it is we have live statistics that go up on our sales floor for all of our sales reps and honestly everyone at the company to look at, and it says who sold the most today, who's answered the most calls, all that kind of, all those kind of statistics get pulled up. And like at the end of the day, for example, with 5 minutes left to go in the day, it'll sort of close out and you'll hear the Rocky theme song come on and you'll see whatever sales rep sold the most, their picture will just come up on the center screen. We try to make it a little more engaging than just seeing charts, right? Because I think charts are nice, but you really want to get people involved and get them to actually pay attention to it. So we like to try to make it as fun as possible for them.
Do we give out any awards?
We have prizes. They're based on monthly performance rather than the daily one. The daily one's all about pride, but we do have awards based on like there are some, incentives, but there's also like a championship, like wrestling style belt that they get to hang on their desk if they win for the month, that kind of stuff. You know, things to make it more fun.
I think I should start up another podcast where we just talk about crazy stuff that like sales departments do.
I think you'd have a lot of content.
I would probably get killed, to be honest with you, because it's worse than some of these things are worse than like the Wolf of Wall Street doesn't even do it justice.
Yeah.
It's, I remember an organization where we had one of those torsos. Do you know the rubber punching bag torsos?
Yeah.
It's like a half human, right? You know, yep. With like a black plastic thing on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a sales contest. And the torso was dressed up as Rambo. So they basically put like a headband on it. They put a wig on it. They made the thing look like Rambo. And then whoever won, similar situation, right? Like whoever won whatever contest was for the day, this was the daily thing, then was allowed to stand at the front of the room with the Chuck Norris joke book. Read a joke out of the Chuck Norris joke book and then do something to the torso. So it went from like people putting cigarettes out on this thing to stabbing it to, I think eventually the guy that actually won it for the month had like a Harley and ended up putting like a chain around its neck and like driving it down the street, dragging it from his motorcycle. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just there's some ridiculously wild thing. Well, yeah, what else do you say to that? You're like, Phil, we're not that crazy. We just have the Rocky theme.
I mean, we've tried to tone it down, right? I mean, I'm sure I've heard some stories pre-growth about what went on in our sales department. But now that we have an HR team, it's like, all right, got to be a little more careful.
Oh, we had HR. We had people shooting starter guns off. We had a guy shoot a starter gun off in the building, inside the building. It had blanks. Oh, well, it's got blanks. Mm. Like in the air when someone would set an appointment or something, shoot a starter gun off. So you brought me back to maybe a darker time. I don't know. And for the record, everybody, I'm married with 8 kids. I'm highly, highly conservative with a lot of values, just so you know. But that doesn't mean that I didn't work in a crazy place. I did. I worked in a very crazy place. It was called CBeyond, in case anyone remembers that. So 28 years old. How did you get started out in... Well, we got kind of how you got started out in technology. Like, you were in business and did that. Mm-hmm. But like, what I want to know what a 28-year-old's first... like version of a computer is. That's like, you're like my son-in-law's age. Yeah. So what was his first computer? I don't know, but he had like, I mean, it was probably like a PlayStation.
Definitely a gateway. I mean, we had a family. My dad was sort of, he was a jack of all trades, but I think when I was young, he worked as like an IT manager. So we definitely had some beat up old gateway computer that was sitting in the family room, probably overheating in some credenza or something, to run like, you know, Sim City.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah, that was it. That was it. I had Pong, if that dates me at all. Literally Pong, screwed into the back of the television. Okay, so data analytics. Mm-hmm. Everyone's saying that data is like the new, like going to be the new currency and all that type of stuff. I don't know. Any thoughts around that?
I mean, I think there's a lot of value in data, but I think the data is only as good as the people either presenting it or interpreting it. I could take the data we have right now in our system and make a million different points that mislead people in a million different directions. So I think as valuable as data is, you have to know what you're doing with it in order to actually present any value from it.
Okay. So let's just use this show then as an example, selfishly. I've got so much data from IT directors. We've got AI bots. My mad scientist, Greg, the Frenchman, Ladal, he's building these like bots that like crawl the episodes and dissect like certain pain points and different issues and key points that, you know, IT directors bring up. And now we've got this whole kind of like mid-market pain point analyzer. We've got these different bots that AI is using to pull out data. What kind of data would you want to know if you had access to 300 of your peers that had all done podcasts on IT leadership? And what would you do with that data?
So my big, I guess the way I was brought up in data analytics was to focus on trends. So my big interest point would be, you know, is there a trend in viewership and what's it based around? Is it based around subject, guest, you know, the background of the guest, you know, does it perform better when we see guests with more experience, less experience, higher level CTO, or do CTOs draw less interest? I don't know. I really like to see which obviously requires a larger data set than a lot of other things, but I really like to see how different metrics tend to trend. And, you know, once you have the trend, you have to see, just because you have the trend, it doesn't mean that you know the cause of it. So you also have to have a background that's able to interpret the data that you're looking at and sort of get the causation behind it.
That's very profound. So, which selfishly makes me want to ask you then, okay, well, where should I be grabbing other data then? And where should we... If you were running this show, Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, or as a listener also, what do you want to hear more of?
This may be specifically just because of my background, but I see, you know, I don't actually bother listening to them, which should tell you something, but I see a million ads for podcasts that are based around technical skills. Yep. And I think there's a lot more interesting content and a lot more value that can be derived from podcasts that teach people how to make IT work from a business perspective.
Yeah.
So to me, it's a lot more interesting, and I think a lot more approachable for a much bigger audience to hear about IT as it relates to business and how it can be valuable to a business, rather than here's the top five coding languages you need to learn to make more money for yourself.
Yeah, boring.
Right.
Besides, who wants to talk with coders? Go hide in a room somewhere. No, I'm just kidding. Look, kind of serious. So that's the point of the show, to bridge the gap between IT and the business world, and how do we take technology and use it as a business force multiplier to make more money, kind of like the Amazon effect. Like, can't I just like go work in a garage for a little while, like Amazon, and then become the richest man in the world?
Yeah.
That's what we want to do, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the most important questions then that an IT director coming in to a role? Because we've got a lot of people that are stuck in the server room still. People, I think it was Aaron Siemens back in the day, said we used to just be guys that hid in the server room and you slid pizzas under the door to us, to the guys that are now creating real business change and business growth. What should the IT leaders, IT directors be doing? Questions they should be asking? Is there... because there's going to be a difference between like the business driven IT director and the IT director that's kind of just new to leadership and trying to figure it out?
Yeah. I think really the most important question that I try to ask myself constantly, because, you know, I am still relatively new to this, is I have to really focus on this sometimes. Is this something that's going to add value to the business, or is this just something that interests me? Because I think sometimes we fixate on things that, you know, there are a lot of tools out there that I think are really, really cool. But when I look at it, I say, hey, we're a plastics company with 100 employees. Does this really fit our business use? Is this going to serve us? And I think that's something that, you know, everybody probably deals with it. I know I definitely do. So yeah, it's really just taking a step back and making sure that whatever you're doing is going to be useful to the company that you're working with.
That's the quote of the show. Is this something very useful for the business, or is this just something that I'm interested in? Because we can get we can go down a rabbit hole very easily on any number of pieces of technology and things that things could do. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you exercise?
Yeah, I try to. You know, it's I'm still young enough that I don't have a good excuse not to. So
I say
for nothing
that
else than appearances, yeah.
I'm dealing with really bad nerd neck. Do you sit in a chair all day? Do you have a standing desk? Do you walk around a lot? What's the deal?
So I try to walk around a lot. I have a dog that frequently makes noises when I'm on calls, which is just great. So I have to make sure she's entertained. And I have a sit-stand desk, but I'm working on mounting my computer to the bottom of the desk, because you come into an issue with a desktop PC and a sit-stand desk where you can't actually stand, or else you wind up with a bunch of cables getting unplugged and stuff. So haven't gotten a bunch of use out of it yet, but
I'm dealing with such a bad case of nerd neck, and I'm just warning everyone now that you can't really do anything with posture. Like, people will tell you can try and sit and, like, you know, sit with good posture and everything, but no, so if you've been psychologically been doing something for so long, you actually need to do exercises. You need to do whatever, cable pulls, face pulls, get to the gym and do all that stuff. So I don't know that I'm just warning everyone now, if you've ever been in a significant level of pain that you've never felt before from like a pinched nerve in a neck, or, you know, a weird C6, C7 thing, all due because you're sitting in a chair all day, or like I have for the last 20 years or something, then you want to avoid that as much as possible. What is the end game for you? What's the future? What do you see the future next 20 years? What's the end game for IT people?
Yeah, I mean, I think that can branch a lot of different ways based on someone's personal interests. But for me, I think it's continuing to try and bridge the gap between IT and the rest of the business, because I think there's a big, even though, you know, people have been talking about doing that for a long time, I think there's still a lot of companies that struggle with that. And I think for me, I'd really like to continue to develop my technical skills. You know, coming from a business background has a lot of advantages, but it also means that a lot of things can go over my head, and I have to do my own research on them to try and stay, you know, as up to date as I should. So I'd really like to continue to develop my technical skills, but at the same time, not lose sight of the value that can be provided by being someone that's able to bridge the gap between the business and the IT side. And I think just growing in that arena.
Well, let's flip the script on that a little bit. What type of, at a bare minimum, what type of business knowledge should you have if you don't have any business knowledge and you've been in IT your whole life?
Okay. I think that the best way to start is definitely to take on some of the easier concepts that can still be valuable. So to me, throughput is a great example. You could break throughput down so simply that you know, a kindergartner could understand it. You could say, hey, here's how much money each stage of the business is sitting on right now, right? And I think
example, we need examples.
Sure.
Let's do this.
So a really basic interpretation of it would be, here's how much we have outstanding in quotes that we're waiting to hear back on. Here's the dollar amount that we have in orders that are waiting to be processed. Here's the amount we have actually processed and sitting in the warehouse waiting to be shipped out. And here's the amount we shipped out today. So if you look at that and you say, we've got 1 million in quotes, we've got 1 million in orders, we've got 500,000 in the shipping area and then we shipped a million out, right? Then you can look at it and say, hey, we probably have a bottleneck that's preventing us from moving the amount that we need to from that actual order stage to the shipping stage. So if you look at it and you say, there's one area of the business that's sitting behind the rest of the others, then you can identify that and say, hey, there's probably something that we can look at, whether it's from an IT side or not, there's something we can look at here and try and identify what the bottleneck is and why we're struggling to make the productivity of this area match the rest of what we've got.
I just throw more bandwidth at it. And
yeah.
So, okay. So throughput. Okay. Next bullet point. What else do we need to know?
Okay. This isn't necessarily a business skill, but this is something I see IT people struggle with that really, I think, prevents them from making the jump to a leadership role.
I'll be the judge of this. Go.
You have to know how to talk to people.
Oh, that is absolutely a business skill. Number one, sales. Absolutely have to. Sales fix all problems. Mark Cuban, more sales fix problems. If you can't talk to people, you just got done. We're using the RingCentral bot to help talk to people. Yeah.
Well, I think for a lot of IT people, I don't know if it's ego or what it is, but they want to prove their knowledge. So when they talk to people, even outside of the IT arena, they speak in very technical terms.
Yeah, we got to nat this, you know, over to, yeah. To Costco on Friday. And
I think, you know, I think you have to trust that you're going to be able to provide value without having to sound like that. Because if you try to present to your CEO and you speak in terms they're not going to understand, if they're direct, they're going to tell you that you're not saying anything that they care about. And if they're indirect, they're going to leave it not thinking that you're really that helpful or vital to the business.
My book is called Speaking the Language of Business IT. There's a chapter called Yes, You Have to Speak to People. So I would say that that's okay. Important. I would say that's important. Okay, next thing.
Yeah.
Throughput, speaking to people. Bullet point three. We're going to have at least
bullet three. Okay.
If not five, we might have to go five.
So this is another thing that I think it's relevant in all arenas. And it's something that I see. I can kind of immediately tell people that I'm working with how I'm going to like them based on their response to this, but it's, you have to be willing to learn.
Okay. Likeability.
You can't come in thinking you know everything, even if you already do, because IT evolves constantly. So if you know everything today, tomorrow, if you don't want to learn anything, you might be behind everyone else. So you have to continue to learn and grow and be willing to kind of be humble and understand that you're never going to be, you know, have 100% grasp on everything.
I could tell right away I'm not going to like you because you are not coachable. I had a past boss that he said one of the number one factors he looks for in someone is coachability. Mm-hmm. He's like, if they're coachable, anyone can grow. He's like, I can teach anyone how to do, like, I'm sure you could teach almost anyone how to use Active Directory or something if you had to, as long as they were coachable. They're like, look, I know how to click on computers. Okay. I know how to do stuff. Okay. Leave me alone. Okay. So coachability, business factors. Mm-hmm. You started out business school, right?
Yeah.
Actual business, nerdy terms, accounting terms or something. We got two more points we need to know. What does an IT director need to know?
This is something I really hate, but it has to be one of the more present issues that I come into. You have to know accounting terminology, at least basic accounting terminology. Because if you're in a business leadership position, even if it's IT, you're probably going to be responsible for a budget. You're probably going to be responsible for presenting an analysis of like new projects that you're going to work on and whatnot. And you're going to have to be able to say, hey, here's how much it's going to cost. Here's how much we're going to make off of it. Here's the 10-year projection from it. You know, all the different accounting terminology, not the super in-depth stuff, but you have to be able to speak money to people.
We should have a section of the show called Making Accounting Fun. Accounting terms.
Good luck.
EBITDA, CapEx, OpEx, gross margin, controllable costs, non-controllable costs, labor, I don't know, flex percentage or something. Flow through profit margin, net sales. I think that would do it. I think if you know those, you're pretty good. If you know those, you're good. EBITDA.
That'd be a pretty good cover. Good luck getting people to watch it.
EBITDA. Okay, we're going to go back to the data analytics. That one is not trending, Phil.
No, probably not.
All the accountants were like, what do you mean? EBITDA. Got to know EBITDA. Got to know it. You don't have to know it, but if you do know it, you're probably going to have a little bit of a step up from somebody else. How many, do you think a lot of IT directors would be able to speak to EBITDA?
No. Really? In my experience, no, I don't think so. Now, to be fair, I generally work with companies that are around the same size as us. So in the least negative terminology possible, it's not always the absolute top candidates, right? They might wind up at larger companies, but most of the IT leadership that I work with would not know.
Okay, so we got a fifth bullet point. So we've got, okay, first of all, I got to try to remember these. See how test fails memory. Throughput, talk to people, coachability.
Mm-hmm.
The most exciting thing of all, accounting terms. What is number five? We must have number five in the business world.
Mm-hmm.
Number five. What is it?
This, again, is relative to the position you're in, but if you're in a manufacturing world, then you have to understand the flow of the warehouse. I think the warehouse is one of the areas that IT is most underutilized and underappreciated. I've worked on projects modernize warehouses. You know, we had people who were manually picking orders and then typing in like item IDs, bins, wherever they're pulling it from, all that kind of stuff. And we actually managed to turn the warehouse from that into not scanners, but actually having gates that do the scanning for them. So basically all they do is pick something up with a forklift, drive it over to the shipping area. And without them entering anything manually, the system knows, hey, they've just picked a full pallet of this. They've moved it from that bin into the shipping area. And they never actually have to go in on a scanner or a computer or anything and enter any of that.
Get involved in operations. I love that you said that. It's so true, because some of the best stories that I've heard from IT managers, that IT directors, CTOs, leadership, whatever, people that got into the C-suite or whatever it is because they affected production on a manufacturing floor.
Mm-hmm.
They came in, and because there's such a separation sometimes. Sometimes you're like, no, what are you talking about? I run the network. I make sure that they've got email. But I've had stories of people in the past that have set up cameras watching the manufacturing floor and then sat there, or just sat there and watched, you know, and we're like, why is that guy doing that? Like, why is he walking from there to there? Like, why'd they stop production, clean everything, clean the place up? Why'd they do that? Oh, because we had an emergency order that came in, and yeah, but it shut down production for like 3 hours because you had to make like one little thing. Like, could they have just ordered more efficiently and you wouldn't have that emergency order? And, you know, I've seen like a single lone star IT guy come in and eliminate like 173% of like labor. So they got rid of 100% of the temporary labor and then decreased other labor costs. You know, that's like massive.
Right.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
The top five. Throughput, which I already forgot. Let's see, throughput. What does throughput mean? What did we say?
At the end of the day, it's identifying bottlenecks.
Oh, yes, bottlenecks. Thank you. It kind of goes with the last one. Okay, yes. So, yes. So from a very simple, so that was the, oh yeah, that was the third grader one that I couldn't remember. That was the, third grader one. The sections of the company and where are the bottlenecks. Yes. Talk to people. If you can't do that, can that be learned? I absolutely think it can be learned. Scripted.
I had to learn it. I was one of the worst examples of being able to talk to people for a long time.
I think you can script it. Like, there's some certain things that you can do. Like, for example, David, I'm just curious, man, what's your favorite food?
Fried chicken.
Oh, man. Raising Cane's, you ever been there?
Oh, yeah. There's one like 5 minutes from me.
Oh, gosh. Gosh.
Yeah.
I ordered the tray. See how we just connected?
Can't fault
you. Let's go hit it. You know what? Forget this. Let's go hit Raising Cane's up right now.
All right.
Here, twist my leg.
No, I'll walk there.
Okay. They just opened one up from me. It's 20 minutes away. And yeah, I guess it's like a 40-minute wait every day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's not many Raising Cane's where I'm from. In fact, I think it was the first one in Connecticut. And I'm not really a huge fan of Connecticut. I just ended up here. But yeah. Oh, so there you go. You can script these different things to make talking with people easier. Yeah. For example, what's your favorite food? Pretty easy. Come up with some scripted questions. And then to segue into IT and how you can talk to people. Hey, when it comes to, I don't know, what's one of the things you guys do? Run a plastic mold machine or something? There's got to be...
We have fabrication saws.
Okay, so hey, when it comes to the, I don't know, everything's going around on the floor down there, the saws and everything, when it comes to this and IT and what you guys do there, what's your single biggest problem, frustration, or concern with us? Yeah, you guys don't know how to talk to people. Oh. Thanks. No, for real, you can ask certain questions that are open. I think open-ended questions is one of the biggest ways to connect with people. Open-ended questions. So yes, it can be learned. It has been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for taking the time to, I guess, to give back to your fellow IT colleagues and people that are running the grind every day and keeping the wheels of industry turning. Cause if everyone in IT just quit, you know, they have all these days now, like today's National Whatever Day. Like, I guess there was Pi Day the other day. There's all these other things. Yeah. They all overlap now, but what if it was like today's the International IT Go On Strike Day?
You know, I don't think that's a bad idea.
I am not a proponent of politics or uprisings or protesting in the street. I am not suggesting this. But what if some knucklehead came up with the idea of today is the National IT Strike Day, where we will log out of everything and go to Raising Cane's.
You know, there's a
Raising Cane's will be like our
yeah, they'll sign up.
Our
no, they'll do cash
POS,
only.
Our point of sale is down. It backfired. Anyways, but except for Raising Cane's, you guys
stay. Yeah, they can stay working.
I can help you with that. Anyways, yeah, what would happen?
I mean, I think there's a joke that has been going around for a long time that's like, in IT, if everything's going well, they ask why they pay you. And if everything's going wrong, they ask why they pay you, right? So sometimes it can it can be easy to feel like you're not appreciated. So maybe that would help.
Yes, I have told people for years, if you're really good at if you're really, really good at IT, you need to go break some things sometimes. You need to break some things so that you can go refix it and be like, hey, look, see, it works.
Right. Or you put arbitrary stops in your code that run, you know, every 10 seconds. And then when someone asks for some optimization, you just remove those and say, hey, we've improved performance.
Yeah. That's messed up, dude. That probably...
I would never do that.
That's messed up. Look at our... Hey, by the way, I would like to have an MBO, management by business objectives, this year. If I increase productivity by 10%, I would like a bonus structure.
Yeah.
Look, just hit F1, F2, 3, 5, shift, control, space bar. Boom, done. thank you, sir. Any words of final advice to anyone out there listening?
I think it's important for everyone to know that you don't have to know everything as long as you're willing to learn whatever you need to.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Thank you for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Thank you, Phil. Take care.